Well, summer is in full gear and fall is just around the corner. And yes, that means once again, it's time for us to go with another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible tonight by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you back tonight.
It's my pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
Last year, about this time, we were talking about the emerald ash borer. And in case people don't know, baseball is made and baseball bats are made from ash. Now, we just saw a recent story that was reported on by Kate Archer Kent about the introduction of a certain type of wasp over in Shongaloo and the Minden area. And they're specifically, they prey on these ash borers. So can you tell us about this approach to insect control and mitigation, especially for destructive species?
Well, what we're dealing with the emerald ash borer, is an invasive species that's not native to the United States. And so back in the mid-1800s, they realized that there were misplaced species, and the train of thought was, well, let's go to their homeland where they're obviously under control.
Right.
There must be some kind of a natural predator or parasite that keeps them under control. And what they've discovered is many of these are small wasps. They're not really called parasites, but they're called parasitoids. And the adult female wasp will find the larvae of the beetle that's burrowed underneath the wood, and they will lay eggs in the larvae, and that will prevent the larvae from developing as adults. And we have parasitoids that are parasites on our native insects as well. If they can't find parasites, oftentimes they'll find some type of a other form of natural control, like a protozoan, or perhaps a nematode. Nematodes are little round worms that will, dogs and cats get worms,
right,
and insects get worms as well. And so oftentimes it may be a fungus that keeps them under check, but they always have to go back to their native land. For example, right now out at Cross Lake, you know, we have this problem with Salvinia. Salvinia is from Brazil. And so they went to Brazil and they found a small weevil, the giant Salvinia weevil, that's keeping the Salvinia under control during warm temperatures. The problem we have with these introduced parasitoids like the emerald ash borer is that we're not sure if they're going to be able to overwinter here. The weevil is having trouble overwintering, and so that's one of the things that they're studying in these limited releases over in Webster Parish is, will they be able to overwinter? So they'll be monitoring those populations for the next 2 years to see if they become established.
And what is the country of origin for the ash borer?
It's not so much a country, but it is from the Asian area.
Okay, so it's endemic to that continent as opposed to North America, but it got over here, and it's causing a little bit of consternation among baseball fans in particular.
Absolutely.
Well, now, I've recently heard that there's some new understanding of bed bugs and why they end up, you know, in your beds.
Yeah.
So tell us what this new news is.
Well, bed bugs act as individuals, but many, many insects will have different pheromones. Everybody understands the concept of a sex pheromone, that the female will release a chemical that will attract the male. Many people understand the concept of a trail pheromone, where the ants will follow the chemical trail. But there's also something that we call an aggregation pheromone that will cause insects, particular insects, if it's the right chemical, to aggregate and come together. And they have discovered the aggregation pheromone for the bed bug, and that's extremely exciting because if we can have a chemical that we can put inside a trap that will attract the bed bugs in, but they can't get out, that's going to be a very nice, one, monitoring device are there bed bugs present? And two, perhaps even a capturing device in order to reduce the numbers of bed bugs so that other alternative things like heat and steam will be more effective in their elimination once they might get established inside someone's house.
You have to wonder down the line whether or not there might be a counteracting agent to that pheromone that you could actually lace inside of a mattress that would basically neutralize it when it comes into contact or something like that. You know, I'm thinking science fiction here, but you never know down the road what they might come up with this new information. Wouldn't that be nice to get rid of the bed bug problem around the country?
It would, especially without relying on certain insecticides that you just don't want inside your home on your bed.
Right.
But again, let me remind the listening audience that although bed bugs are a nuisance and they do bite you and they do feed on blood, they don't transmit any type of infectious disease. They don't transmit any bacteria or viruses or protozoans. And so people kind of cringe when they hear me say, I'd much rather get bitten by a bed bug than a mosquito, because I know the mosquito has the real possibility of transmitting either West Nile or the new chikungunya virus, and we can go on and on, just like we did in the Health Matters back in July when I was on and we talked about infectious diseases, especially those transmitted by arthropods.
Exactly. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can call in tonight at 800-552-8502 to get your question in. That's 800-552-8502. And we're going to go to Betty from Apple Springs, Texas. Betty, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Thank you, Dr. Burden, for taking my call.
You're welcome, Betty.
I'm calling to ask, is there anything that I can do to get rid of carpenter bees?
You know, carpenter bees, they don't make a hive, so you can't really poison their hive. They're solitary bees, and as we know that they'll take, and the females will drill through the wood in order to make their little nurseries, the best thing I've been able to do is just act as a deterrent. I have a little badminton racket that I go out there and I kind of knock them down and shoo them away. And once they start to drill their holes in the wood, I will take a dowel stick and plug that up. And that discourages them as well. Okay. And if you are just persistent in doing that, especially early in the spring when they're extremely abundant, then you can deter them coming around your house. And you can use conventional wasp and hornet spray and shoot them out of the air and paralyze them. But so there's mechanical methods and there are chemical methods, but there's nothing you can really do that's going to set up a barrier and say, you know, carpenter bees, beware and stay out. There's nothing like that. I hope that helps, Betty.
Okay, thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist tonight, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can get your calls in right now. All lines are open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we'll take all calls about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, tonight at that number. And we encourage you to call in. Recently, I got a interesting email that went around. It was 10 fascinating facts about ants. And I want to talk to you about one of these. I'm not sure I want to dine on these, but are ants edible?
Oh, extremely so. You know, there for a while, there was a big craze about chocolate-covered ants. And, you know, put chocolate on anything, you know, people are going to eat it. As well as here in the South, if you cover it in cheese and fry it, they'll eat it as well. But there's actually not that much nutrition in ants, but they are rather tasty, especially if they're sauteed in a little bit of garlic butter. The thing about ants is they belong in the family of Formicidae. And that's because all ants produce an acid that's called formic acid. It's very closely related to vinegar, acetic acid. And so some people that like to eat ants, and there are people out there that exist. In fact, North America is one of the areas that is basically, they are entomophobic as far as entomophagy is concerned. Entomophagy means the eating of insects. But there are a lot of cultures that eat insects. And one of the prizes is paper wasp larvae. They have a very nutty, crunchy. Caterpillars are very nutritious, and there used to be a newsletter on eating insects, but that's fallen down by the way. But there are a lot of large city restaurants that specialize in insect fare, and the thing about it is that insects are high in protein. In fact, that's why they actually cultivate a lot of crickets for chicken feed. It's high in protein and low in cholesterol. So, you know, what nutritionist wouldn't, you know, recommend that type of a diet?
Absolutely. And of course, down here, there is the ever popular mud bug, which is not technically a bug, but, you know.
Be careful.
Right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 with any question concerning our insect world, both fiendish and friendly. That's 800-552-8502 to call in tonight. And we did have a caller online, but he had to drop his call because of something else, but he did leave his question. And the question was simply, what was the origin of the original country for cicadas, and why do they stay in the ground so long?
Well, the original origin of cicadas, they are basically worldwide. So you can't really say, because there's many, many different species of cicadas, you can't really say that they're from the Middle East, or they're from the Orient, or they're from South America. Now, why do they stay so long in the ground? First of all, there are two, I don't want to say families, but there are two groups of cicadas. One that we call the annual cicadas, and those are the ones that are out right now. Right. They basically come out in the summer, they mate, they lay their eggs, the little grubs go down into the soil where they feed on roots for 1 year, and then they emerge again. So they have an annual cycle of 1 year. And that's not uncommon with many insects that develop in the soil, like June bug larvae would be another example of that. And then we have our 13-year and our 17-year periodical cicadas. And as to why they stay down 13 years or 17 years, I'm not sure if we've ever really understood that. It's kind of a gamble, because if you're relying on your species to emerge every 13 years, one, it has to be extremely synchronized, and because of that, you would think that they would be somewhat critically, you know, threatened by any kind of major disturbance, you know. So it's just one of those things about Mama Nature.
It's one of those strange things. I'm sure nature has a long-range plan for that, but we just ain't figured it out all yet.
I don't know the answer.
Well, give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 if you have the answer to the mysterious cicada or any other questions regarding our insect world. Dr. Beverly Burden is with us tonight to answer your questions. We have Caroline from Shreveport next online. Caroline, what's your question tonight? What's bugging you?
There's a thing that I've never seen until this year, and it's not technically an insect. I can tell that, but I'm guessing maybe it's some sort of larvae. I find them, they're tiny. They're less than the length of my little fingernail, so they're under half an inch. And there's a sort of oblong, grayish-brown, flat slate that I thought was the creature, except then I finally, they will be attached to a wall and be gradually creeping up the wall. I realized that what looked like was a tiny, tiny segmented worm of some kind was inside this little sort of flat capsule, and it could actually, this is so bizarre. I mean, it's like something from Mars. But I've seen like a number of them, 7 or 8 over the course of the summer this year. And one time I was watching it, and it reversed directions by suddenly coming out of an opening at the opposite end of the little tiny plate and going in the other direction.
You know,
any suggestions?
I do. I have two. Actually, this came up a couple weeks ago. one of my ex-students, Jerome Lewis, came to me and had some very interesting pictures of these critters. And there are two explanations. I myself have not seen one. I've only heard them described, and I've seen some photographs of them, but I haven't really been able to get my hands on them to do any type of dissection myself. There are two possibilities. There are something that we call sod webworms, and these are very similar to the bagworms that get on cypress and arborvitaes, and they their little caterpillars live in a sack. The other possibility is the fact that since we've had so much rain this year, there's this group of insects that are called caddisflies. And normally, their larvae are aquatic, and they will build little cases, a hole at both ends, normally, out of pebbles or twigs, and they will feed on algae. But I got to do some investigating, and there is actually a terrestrial caddisfly, and it's going to be, it's got to be one of those either two. But if somebody out there can bring me some specimens so I can get my hands on these things. And by the way, you described it perfectly, exactly the way Jerome described it. So they have to be the same thing. And I would love to get my hands on some of these to determine which is which.
I'm sorry, you're saying caddisfly?
Yeah, caddis, C-A-D-D-I-S, caddisfly.
Okay,
caddisfly. Or a sod, as in soil webworm. And I'm pretty sure it's got to be one of those two.
They're tiny.
I know.
They're minuscule, and yet they're really creepy. They're bizarre. All right. Well, thank you. This is more information than I have.
Well, you know that they're not posing any threat other than a nuisance and a curiosity. They're not going to invade your house and eat it down or anything.
That's where I'm seeing them.
I'll just vacuum them up. They'll be fine.
But it's usually like I do with every other insect. I usually like catch them on a little piece of paper and take them outside.
Oh, well, send one in then.
Yeah.
Really, I should maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, people send me stuff all the time.
Absolutely. That's how we learn, is we get things that we don't know and we study them. So
this was literally out of left field. Like, I mean, God, in a whole lifetime, I'd never seen anything like it.
Right. Well, thank you for calling tonight, Caroline. And you are listening to What's Bugging You, your program about insects with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She is online tonight to answer your questions at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Kenneth from Texas is online next. Kenneth, what's bugging you tonight?
We have a severe problem with, we call them leaf cutter ants.
Yep.
They make the trails all through the yard. We have big mounds of them. And my neighbor has even went so far as to call the county manager here. And nobody seems to be able to know how to get rid of them.
Well, why do you want to get rid of them?
Well, what they're doing is they're making tunnels all through the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And our road is actually literally caving in.
Well, that's no good. Normally, at this time of the year, they're called Attica. They're leaf cutter ants, and they have a really interesting biology. They will go out and find foliage and leaves, and they will cut the leaves into manageable units. They will carry the leaves back to their underground nest, but they don't eat the leaves. But they use the leaves to grow a fungus on, and it's the fungus that they eat. They actually have a colony of these over in Sideport, or at least they used to, and they're fascinating to watch. Now, with ants, since they live underneath the ground, it's probably going to take some type of an insecticide. And I can tell you what I recommend for fire ants, but I don't know if it would be applicable to leafcutter ants. I would have to do some research on that, but there is a chemical that's called acephate, and they use it on fire ants. You might try that on the leafcutter ants. There's general insecticides like, imidacloprid that you can put in the ground as a soil drench that might affect the leafcutter ants as well. And so I would definitely try some type of a chemical method, and hopefully your road will survive. Have you tried anything like that, Kenneth?
We have tried everything, fire ant, because, in Texas, we're in East Texas.
Yeah.
And we live close to the lake. So, we've tried everything fire ant related that we can find, and it don't even seem to faze them. They go around it. It doesn't bother them. And if you get them to move, they don't move but just a few feet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another big mound of them, and there's probably a half acre mound behind my neighbors, and everybody we've talked to, all of them are in that colony. They're just springing up holes all around, and we're talking 500 yards. There'll be more holes, more entrances.
Yeah, I've seen large colonies of these that, you know, that take up, you know, several, you know, square yards, but nothing this big. I would get my county extension agent out there to take a look at it with something like this. I mean, this is beyond what I can help you with over the phone. This is fascinating. If you want to email me at beverly.burden@lsus.edu, I'll try to look into this a little bit more and get back to you, Kenneth.
Okay. I have went so far as to have an exterminator come out, and he said that they would have to pump gas in the ground.
That does not sound rational to me at all. In fact, that's
not to me either. And the price was astronomical.
Yeah,
plus that would pollute groundwater,
and there was actually no guarantees. He said.
And if you're talking about petroleum gas, then that's not going to be good for the water. If you're talking about something like ethylene gas or other types of gases,
he called it a bromine gas.
Oh, really? Because that's really not that supposed to be that available anymore. Bromide gas is not good as get either. In fact, the EPA is starting to ban bromide gas.
Right.
Ethylene bromide.
That was the kind of gas he was talking about. And this has been several years. We're talking maybe 2.5-3 years.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, that was just not something, you know, price-wise that the neighbors were going to come together and do. On top of, we really didn't think that was healthy for, like I said, our water supply and things of the nature.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate your information.
Thanks for your call, Kenneth.
Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Tim, we got you on deck, but we're going next to Walter from Combs Neal, Texas. Walter, you're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, Dr. Burden, I have pantry moths, and I thought I got rid of them. But I found one nest, and I got a product called Safer that has a pheromone in it, but it's not catching all of them.
These pheromone traps, they're good for monitoring, but they're not good for total elimination. I've had this problem, too. There's two different types of pantry pest. Are you talking about the little beetles, or are you talking about the little caterpillars?
Talking about the little brown moths.
Yeah, the little brown moths. Probably Indian.
They do have a caterpillar, yeah.
Yeah, these are probably Indian meal moths. There's also Mediterranean meal moths. But what you have to do is you have to, and I've had to do this twice, you have to take everything out of your pantry and do exactly what you said. There's got to be some kind of a, you called it a nest, but there's got to be something that they're feeding on. One time for me, it was a bag of pecans. The other time, it was actually in a canister of dried pinto beans. And what they do is the caterpillars will feed on the source, and then when they start to get ready to pupate, they will crawl away, and they like to get into little tight joints, and they'll form a little cocoon, and they will pupate, and then they will emerge as adults, mate, and lay more eggs. So you have to take everything out. You have to find the source of what they're feeding on, eliminate that. I'm talking about taking the boards out because they'll get behind the boards of a pantry, completely cleaning everything up and sealing everything, and not just in Ziploc bags because they can chew through Ziploc bags. Put them in hard canisters like you know, Tupperware containers or Ziploc containers that are hard plastic. And that's the only way that you're going to be. It's pure sanitation. And it's not that you were like cockroaches, that you're just having food everywhere. They'll seek out, you know, they're terrible. But that's what you have to do. Take everything out, seal everything up, and put everything back in. And if you want to then use the pheromone traps as a monitoring device to find out if they come back or not, then that would be fine.
And also, I have a nightlight down near the floor, and I put a bowl of water under it, and they're attracted to it at night. And at first, there were a whole bunch of them in there. But not so much anymore.
Yeah,
I have a curious question about these little millipedes.
Yes, sir.
They're about an inch and a quarter long.
Right.
They keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. How do I control them?
Well, with these little millipedes, first of all, millipedes are completely harmless. They don't have fangs like centipedes do. But you don't want to handle them a lot because they can release a very foul-smelling substance onto your hands. And millipedes and any insect can get into your house if you can even see the little bit of light or crack underneath the door. If there's a little bit of tear in your weather stripping, that they can certainly get in there and invade your house. And a lot of times it's just a matter of just keeping them swept up and keeping them out of the house. And sooner or later they'll go away. They're just doing what they're supposed to do. They're looking for food and they're lost.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, Walter.
Thank you, Walter. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight about anything related to our insect world, either the fiendish insects or the friendly ones. The number to call is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Lines are open right now. We're going to go next to Tim from Nacogdoches, Texas. Tim, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call there. I wanted to check with y'all and see if you might be able to offer me a solution for a wasp problem I've got out in my barn and in my well house. Got these two colonies of red wasps. They're just really persistent. I've sprayed them with three different kinds of, you know, over-the-counter pesticide stuff and waited till night to get after them so they're all there and dormant, and they just keep coming back. They won't go away. And I mean, they must be big colonies because there's just tons of them all over these two spots.
There may be more nests than what you think in there. You're doing everything right. You're using the wasp and hornet spray. Those contain pyrethrins in there. That's a natural insecticide as well as a paralyzing insecticide. One mistake a lot of people make is they don't remove the nest after they've killed the adults off the nest, because there still might be viable immatures in there that will go ahead and develop and recolonize that nest. So make sure that you're removing the nest in your well house and in your barn. Do a thorough check. Make sure you get them all out. And, you know, it is a perpetual problem because they're going to continue to make nests if it's a suitable environment. And there's really nothing that you can do to make it an unsuitable environment other than just, you know, board up and make your barn airtight so insects can't get in there. And that's just not feasible to do, Tim. Are you removing the nest once you spray them?
I did in the well house. They kind of came back there. The one in the barn, there was a little hole in between a couple of the joists, and I think they've gotten back in there because that's where they seem to come out of, so I can't really get in there to get after them.
Well, they're persistent, and so you have to be persistent as well. And I just took out seven wasp nests out of my dad's house that I was visiting over the weekend, because he just doesn't pay attention, and he doesn't realize that they're just coming back and recolonizing, and so you just have to be persistent on it. There's nothing you can do to completely eliminate them.
All right. Well, I'll just keep after them, I guess.
Yeah, no magic bullet here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can call in right now. We have lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get your call in to Dr. Burden. And we're going to go to Rick next. He's visiting here in Shreveport, but he's from Metairie, Louisiana. Rick, what's bugging you tonight?
I want to find out about the diatomaceous earth. Is that a good product to use to get rid of, small bugs like ants and fleas and that sort of stuff?
Rick, diatomaceous earth is basically ground-up diatoms. So basically it's almost like ground glass, ground silica. And it's not going to be effective for ants. And it's not going to be effective for insects that have hard bodies. We normally use diatomaceous earth as a perimeter border to keep things like slugs out. a slug crawling across an inch or two of dichotomous earth is like us crawling over razor blades. It just tears them up, and they end up bleeding to death. Or caterpillars, but not so much ants or beetles. Moths are going to fly right over it. And so it's only good for soft-bodied insects. I hope that helps.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for your call.
You're listening to What's Bugging You tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We're taking your calls tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And you can call in right now about anything relating to our insect world. We did have a caller call in. They left their message, though, and they wanted to know, they have a major flea problem. Is there any alternative insecticide that can kill the fleas and leave other insects alone?
Yes, there is. With the adults, there's something that we call a juvenile hormone derivative. And this is oftentimes what's placed on the dog or the cat to deter the adults from feeding. But if the adults do feed and they come into contact with this juvenile hormone mimic, it basically acts like a reproductive sterilizer. They will not be able to reproduce, and the females will not be able to make eggs. Now, with the immatures, if your dog or your cat sleeps in a certain area, has a house or a bed, that's where you'll find the larvae. The larvae of fleas are like little beetle grubs, and they're feeding on any kind of decaying organic matter. And there is a chemical that's called methoprene, and it's only effective against the immatures, completely safe for your dogs and cat. And what that does is that prevents them from molting from one larval stage to another larval stage. And so you're basically using the insect's own chemicals, juvenile hormone, and then this methoprene that's a larvicide to take care of both the adults and the immatures. If you don't take care of the immatures, then they're going to eventually hatch and form and molt into adults. And then just good sanitation, keep them washed, you know, with the good flea shampoo, vacuum the area, clean the bedding, and that should pretty much take care of the problem without using any harsh chemicals.
You're listening to What's Bugging You tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cecilia from Camden, Arkansas, you're online next. Cecilia, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you for your call. What's bugging you, Cecilia?
Well, from time to time, we find these scorpions going around the house, and we really don't know where are they coming from. We have been looking and trying to find a nest or something, but suddenly we see it in the middle of the living room or in the bathroom. So what is it that we can do about it?
A couple things. One, you can relax because the scorpions that we have in this area are not known to be extremely dangerous with their venom. The sting of a local scorpion in the Arklatex area is no more than the sting of a wasp bite, unless somebody is hypersensitive. You know, we know that some people are allergic to wasp mm-hmm. bites, and some people may be hypersensitive and allergic to scorpion bites. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, insects, especially flat scorpions are very, very flat. They can crawl underneath the smallest spaces of doors, windows, anything like that. Now, scorpions are hunters. They're predators, and they hunt at night. And one of the cool things about scorpions is that when you shine a UV light on them, they will glow. And you can get UV light just like a flashlight. You can get a flashlight UV light. They're very easy to get. Just go online and order one. And if you go out at night around the perimeter of your house and you try to find these scorpions, with the UV light, they will light up and you can actually follow them back to their nest. Normally, their nest is going to be like a pile of wood or underneath a flat piece of plywood or some area like that, wherever it's dark, damp, and they can get away from the harsh sun during the and the heat of the day. There's really nothing you can do to, rid them from the house. But when you see them, either flush them out, capture them, and put them back outside, or stomp on them if you really want, if you're that kind of person. Or, you can just, you can use some regular insect sprays, but because of their cuticle is so tough, their exoskeleton is so tough, it really wouldn't be something that I would recommend. If it was me, I would just stomp them and throw them out, but I would also try to find the nest.
All right.
Oh, let me ask you one more thing. So do you live on an old house site or a new house site?
No, it is fairly new.
That's not uncommon with fairly new houses because you basically have gone in there and now you're living where they used to live and you have displaced them in their natural ecosystem environment. And we do sometimes find that scorpion problems are a problem in new housing developments at least the first 3 to 4 years that people inhabit those.
All right.
Good luck.
We'll look around then. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Cecilia. Thank you.
I have a curious question. You say they're hunters and they are predators. What are they preying on, and is that good for us that they're preying
on
they're
something? Beneficial insects. You know, I mean, they're eating. They will basically eat anything that they can find, especially other insects, caterpillars, crickets. I used to have a pet scorpion, and I would feed it small grasshoppers and small crickets, and scorpions feed a lot like spiders do, and the fact they don't really chew tissue is what they do is just macerate the tissue and feed on the juices of the insect that they do capture. And so scorpions are more closely related to spiders than to insects.
So in a way, they really are a beneficial insect.
Yeah.
They just, you don't want them in your house and stinging you because they are painful, and I've been stung by one. Are
just like other spiders.
Are the scorpions in Florida fairly similar to the ones in this region of the country?
In the Southeast, yes.
Okay.
Most of the time, the scorpions that can be life-threatening are going to exist in the arid southwest part of the United States, over in Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California.
And those are usually bigger, are they not?
Bigger and blacker.
Yeah.
The ones we have here are small, kind of tan, yellowish in color. And they're, like you said, they're considered to be beneficial arthropods because they play a natural role in the ecosystem.
Yeah, I lived out in the woods for 10 years, so I had my fill of scorpions. So
just check, dump out your shoes before you put
exactly.
them on.
Exactly. Well, pants, legs too, because they'll crawl up inside of those. So, you are listening to What's Bugging You tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Ben, you are on deck, and we're going to go next to Greg from Nacogdoches. Greg, what's bugging you tonight?
Hey guys, I'm really enjoying the show. I've always wanted an entomologist in the family, but I guess NPR is the next best thing.
Well, there you go.
For a great show. couple things. One, I heard a guy ask about wasps. You know, I put about 2 quarts of Dawn soap in a 5-gallon sprayer mixed with water, and hit all my hives. And I'll tell you, they felt like they were being hit with a blowtorch. It was great. It killed them and did a great job of them. So that worked. That worked for me anyway, and I didn't have to use chemicals. I appreciated that.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, soap is a natural insecticide. Let me tell you what soap does when you spray it on insects. All insects have a waxy layer on their outside skeleton that prevents them from becoming dehydrated. And so what you're doing, Greg, I'll just call you Cousin Greg since we're part of the family now.
That's right.
is you're spraying the soap on there, and that's going to cause them to basically dehydrate to death. But using the sprayer, you're basically power washing them off as well, which I like that because I like mechanical forms of control when you don't want to use heavy chemical forms of control. So you're basically combining a nice, what we call it, insecticidal soap plus a power wash, and I can see where that would be extremely beneficial, and I want to thank you for sharing that with our audience tonight. Is there something else that's bugging you, Greg?
No, his call drops, so we're
going
to go to the next one, and you are listening to What's Bugging You Tonight from Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. We're going to go next to Ben from Dry Prong and Doug from Marshall. Stay on deck. You're up after Ben. Ben, what's bugging you tonight?
back in the spring, a friend of mine showed me a rubber fuel line, a fuel tank, and a sheet of plastic that he had dry stored. And he drained the fuel out of them and stored them over the wintertime. And they were riddled with little pinholes. It looked like it was insect damage. And he said he found some larvae with them, but I never saw it. What could have bored that or cut that like that?
Was it in the plastic or the fuel line?
It was in both.
Ooh, it sounds more like corrosion to me than an insect damage. There's no insect that I know of that can go through metal except for one.
The plastic tank.
Oh, the plastic tank. Okay, yeah, so that might be a possibility. Especially small enough, it sounds like it would be a small, what we would call a pine beetle or engraving beetles. It almost looks like you took very, very small shotgun shot and blasted into there. Is that what it looked like, Ben?
Yeah, they were little round holes.
Yeah, and sometimes they're called powder post beetles. I've never known them to feed on plastic. They normally feed on wood, but it's not beyond the realm of, you know, impossibility either. But look up engraving beetles and powder post beetles, and you might get an answer there.
All right. Thank you much.
You're welcome.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can call in right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 with any question concerning our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly. And we're going to go next. Steve, you're on deck. Steve from Bernice, Louisiana. But Doug, you're up next from Marshall. Doug, what's bugging you tonight?
Okay, I had a little black carpenter ant infestation back in the late spring, early summer. And I was wondering if that was a concern for a termite.
We do have black ants here, but they're not necessarily carpenter ants. Carpenter ants are oftentimes compared to termites because they excavate the wood. They don't eat it like termites do, but they do excavate it, and they can cause structural damage. But carpenter ants are not very common in the South. There's probably some other type of black ant. There are over 1,000 species of ants worldwide, over 100 species of ants in just this area alone. And a lot of them are associated with wood because they're in there and they are feeding on other insects that are in the wood. So they're actually acting as predators and beneficial insects. And as long as they're not causing any cosmetic damage to anything, I wouldn't really worry about them.
Okay, I put out the little combat plastic things, and they all disappeared in a couple of days.
Well, either that worked or, you know, the other weird thing, with all the rain that we had this last spring, I had an infestation of what we call crazy ants, and as soon as things started drying up, they went away just like that, and because they were just coming in and they were feeding off the moisture, and environmental conditions can play a lot in where you're going to see insects where, and so I'm glad that they went away for you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Shay from Lufkin, you're on deck. Steve from Bernice, you're next. Steve, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I've got two creatures I want to ask about. This past spring, in the wet weather, I noticed for the first time in my life, a thing that looked like a worm that was growing about 6 to 8 inches long, and it was flat, and on its belly, it was like a snail, and its head was shaped like a battle axe kind of, but it was flat, and it kind of looked like a hammerhead shark or something going slide across the top of the ground.
I'll tell you exactly what that is, Steve. It's called a shovel-headed flatworm. And you only find them in very, very, very moist environments. It's one of the few terrestrial flatworms that can exist. They are carnivorous on certain grasshopper eggs and other insects. But for the most part, they're kind of a pest. And you can kind of associate them in a very, very loose way with slugs, although from a zoologist's point of view, I would almost cringe to have to say that, but they are soft-bodied, and they're harmless, but the first time you see them, and they got this dark line that runs right down the middle of them, and they're just totally bizarre looking. I remember the first time I saw them, I just thought, the same as you, what the heck is that? And that's because that was when I first moved to the Louisiana. They're not in dry Texas where I grew up. And so that's a very interesting. What else do you have, Steve?
I'm not sure if it's a wasp or a hornet. It makes a nest like a hornet, but it's a small nest, probably 2.5 to less than 3 inches across. And it's got a small, one small hole where they enter in at the bottom. And I'm not sure what the wasp looks like because this is at my cousin's house. But the first ones I ever heard of, my aunt and Chatham had one in her house, and it stung her. But I don't know what when I was a child, when I was younger, that you never saw these things.
Yeah, the paper wasp make two different types of nests. Those that are open, and that's what we see with a lot of yellow jacket nest. But there are several species of what we refer to as hornets that make closed nests. And they look like a little ball. And given in time, and every year, they will add another layer, and they will add another layer, and they will add another layer. You just saw, you know, one that just started construction. Give it enough time, it'll grow larger and larger. And let me just say this one thing to our listening audience in general. Most of the time, wasps, unless you disturb them, are not aggressive. They're not going to see a human being walking by and say, oh, let me go sting that human being. Unless they're disturbed or unless they're threatened, wasps normally are not going to be a problem. If you disturb their nest, just like honeybees, they're going to come out and they're going to be aggressive. And that's just their nature. And so just be careful with them.
Are these a predator that the Agriculture Department introduced, or did they just wander in just as some sort of an alien insect?
They're native. Because they are small, you just normally don't see them until the nests get bigger.
I suppose. But I have to take your word for it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 with any question concerning our insect world, either the fiendish insects or the friendly ones. That's 800-552-8502. Shay from Lufkin, you're online next. Shay's What's Bugging You tonight?
I just had a question about harvestmen. I've heard of declines in harvestmen populations and was wondering if it's affecting East Texas. And if so, is there anything I can do to help encourage growth of the populations?
Well, first, let's tell our listening audience what harvestmen are, because that is normally not the name that most people will know them by. Most people know them as daddy long legs. And a lot of people think that they are spiders, but they are not spiders at all. They're in a completely different class. Well, not so much class, but a different order from spiders, because they have a segmented abdomen and they do not have fangs. A lot of people are under the myth that daddy long legs are a very poisonous spider, but just their fangs are so small they can't penetrate the tissue. That's just an old wives' tale, an old myth. I have not heard of a decline in harvestmen. They feed on dead organic matter. They are an integral part of the ecosystem. I really wouldn't worry about the decline in harvestmen until we really notice something. But what we are noticing that as we become more and more urbanized, some of the things that we're used to seeing now we don't see any more, and it's not because they're being threatened, it's just that they're no longer occupying those habitats. For example, lightning bugs. A lot of people ask me, where'd the lightning bugs go? They're still out there. They still exist. They're in nice, healthy populations, but just not in the areas that you're used to seeing them. They have migrated out to the edges of the urban environment.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Shay.
You're listening to What's Bugging You, and we've got just a couple of more callers on the line. We're going to go to Paula next from Longview. Paula, what's bugging you tonight?
Spiders. we have a our house is out in the country, and we're close to water, and we are just covered in spiders on the outside of our house and kind of at a loss of the best way to control them.
Are they actually bugging you, Paula? I mean, what's the problem with having spiders out there? They're not aggressive. What did they do to you?
The problem is the webs are just such a mess.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of barn swallows, and they, you know, they eat some, but, you know, we clean them off, and then they just, within a couple of weeks, they're back, and we have webs between the windows and the screens. I mean, we have a lot. It's not just one or two webs. They're everywhere.
This has been a banner year with all the rain that we've had for all kinds of insects in general. And whenever you increase the prey population, you're going to increase the predator population, and that's what's going on. We have lots and lots of spiders because we have lots and lots of insects that the spiders like to eat. And there is nothing that you can spray in your barn or on the outside that's going to say, go away, spider. There are some companies that claim to have chemicals like this, but I've never seen a study that they are truly effective. And so the best thing you can do is just keep power washing them away, get the hose out there and take the broom out there and just be diligent, because any spider that's going to build a nest that you can see are not venomous. Yes, they have fangs, but they're not going to be harmful to humans and pests unless you pick them up and handle them.
Okay.
Good luck with that. It's just Mother Nature.
Well, I appreciate the birds. I look out my window and they're hanging from the roof. They're between the windows and the screens. They're just everywhere.
Mechanical removal is really all you can do. I mean, if you want to take and spray a typical insecticide on them, like a pyrethrin, that would kill them, but there's just going to be more to take their place.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, because we've tried spraying, and I just wondered if there was any easier way to remove them. We've tried the broom, and we tried a shop vacuum.
Have you tried the water hose?
No, I haven't.
Get the water hose out. Wash them off. You know, the itsy bitsy spider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Went down the.
Try that.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thanks for your call, Paula.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we've got time for at least one more call, possibly two. Tramel from Shreveport, you're online next. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, I moved here several years ago from Los Angeles, so there's a lot of bugs, of course, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
But one thing that's kind of irritating to me, because I'm trying to keep the house clean, I'm kind of a fanatic about that. This, I've never seen it before. It's usually where a cobweb is. And there's really tiny little black things, you know. They don't move. At least I haven't seen them move. But they're just in a little nest around the cobwebs in the corner. And I constantly clean them up. And then several days later, they're there again. And I like to know what they are and what can I do about them. They're little round black things.
Are they ever associated with any of your houseplants?
Well, I have a lot of houseplants on the sunroom, but I don't see them on the plant, and they're just usually up in the corner where I do not have any plants.
These are just very, very, very small spiders. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they're just a cosmetic damage,
right. And
you just have to keep cleaning them up. There's really nothing you can do. Just like Paula, is just keep on top of them. And welcome to Louisiana.
Thank you. And you guys have a nice day. Thanks.
You too.
Lots of insects in the South. Okay. All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton. And we had Suzanne call in a little earlier. She left a question for you. She rents an older house and found curled up worms, maybe caterpillars, that are about a half to three quarters of an inch long with a gray stripe. And she wants to know how to get rid of them without using harsh chemicals.
What she is describing is probably dead millipedes. Millipedes, when they die, they always curl up. And not so much with any other type of caterpillar, what some people would call worms. And just keep sweeping them up and vacuuming them up, and sooner or later they'll go away as the seasons progress.
All right, and we've got about 4 minutes left. We're going to go once again to Ben from Dry Prong. His call dropped before you got a chance to follow up with him. Ben, you're online with Dr. Burton again. What's bugging you again?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't drop. I hung up and forgot about this. I've got some black flies in my worm beds. They're just, like, taking over the feed. They're an inch or so long, the flies are. The maggots get about three-quarters of an inch. And, you know, I feed them my table scraps, and I feed them manure and stuff, and I feed them just all kinds of stuff, and they just love it. Short of putting screens, is there any way I can exclude them? Hormone, chemical, anything like that?
At first, when you was talking about small black flies, the first thing that came to my mind was fungus flies. And they'll be feeding on just this minuscule fungus that would grow in a rich organic environment like that. But fungus flies are not that large. The second thing that comes to mind is something that's called dachinid flies. Or they could actually be syrphid flies. And no, they would have to be dachinids, not syrphids. And they'll just feed on any kind of organic layer. And other than screening, that's all you can do. It's kind of like putting dollar bills out on the sidewalk and expecting people not to take them. If you put the food there, they're going to come.
Yeah, they have been coming pretty heavy. All right.
Good luck, Ben.
Thank you much. Bye-bye.
And you have been listening to Dr. Beverly Burton tonight on What's Bugging You. I have one final question, and that is concerning, we've had some recent infestations, some invasive species, the Formosa termite. And what's new on that horizon in the last minute or so? Is there anything else that we need to be worried about that might be coming into the Louisiana or our South area from other states?
There is a couple of stink bugs that will feed on plants that is causing some concern. One is called the Marimot stink bug. It's up in the northern part of the regions right now. A lot of people consider stink bugs just to be plant pests. But the thing about stink bugs is that there are one group of stink bugs that will feed on plants and another group of stink bugs that will feed on other stink bugs. And so you have both plant pests and predators. There's also something that we're looking at right now called the red-banded stink bug. It has a red color. It has an abdominal spine to it. And so if you see a stink bug that has a red marking on it, or you see a stink bug that's very, very brown and mottled, then give me a call, because I'd be very interested in looking at those specimens to see if they've invaded this area at this point.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Beverly Burton. You've been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and we'd like to thank each of you for calling tonight, and especially those who joined us on the air but didn't call in and enjoyed the show. This show is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Next month, Cliff Shackelford will join us on Tuesday the 15th for Bird Calls, and Dr. Burton will be back in October for another edition of What's Bugging You. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burton, with assistance from Wally Derleth, Henry Edwards, and Tim Snell. Dr. Burton is our expert entomologist, and I was your host tonight. This is Red River Radio, your public radio station from LSUS.